This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning, we'll be talking about slip and fall cases. We have with us today from the law offices of John Day, attorney Brandon Bass. How are you this morning?
Good. Scott, how are you doing?
I'm good. So what's been happening?
Just enjoying the spring weather. It's finally starting to turn, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised how cold it's been the last couple of days. Because, I mean, just last week it was like 80.
But that's the best part of Tennessee spring. I mean, you just get teased and it goes back and forth. You know, put on a sweater and then t-shirt. It's the best part before it takes to full steam ahead for the summer.
Yeah, you just never know what to expect.
Yep.
So anyway, slip and fall cases, that is, I guess those are things you hear about a lot. People joke about slip and fall cases. People talk about slip and fall cases. They're out there. What are they exactly?
Sure. A slip and fall case is just sort of a way we people talk about it. But the law calls it a premises liability case. The idea overall is that if a store, potentially even a homeowner, causes you to fall, then they're responsible for the harm. And the cause you to fall is the important part of there. The law in Tennessee doesn't make, in fact, it actually says they are not the guarantors of your safety. They're not your insurance company. When you go into a store or a restaurant, it's their job not to hurt you. It's not their job to guarantee you'll walk up and down the aisles just fine. And if a customer a half a second before you spills their water and you slip on it, if the store had no opportunity or responsibility to get rid of that spill, the store's got no legal fault either. So it's really just the way we say, if the person got hurt because of something that the landowner did, then the landowner can be responsible.
In court, are you also looking at, all right, well, the person who fell, they're at fault this percentage because their shoes were too big or whatever the case was. But how do you go about deciding those numbers?
That's an excellent question, Scott. First, what you're talking about is we compare the fault of multiple people in Tennessee. Sometimes it takes two to tango and more than one person can be responsible for an individual getting hurt, including the person that got hurt. If a person goes, remember Tom Cruise in Risky Business?
I do.
Sliding across.
That's right.
If the person goes sliding across the floors on purpose, even if they were slick, the judge and jury's probably going to say, well, you were kind of asking for it.
Yeah.
Right? And if you were asking for it, and it's at least halfway your fault, you get nothing. The victim cannot be equally at fault for what happened to them. But if they're less than 50%, if we're sitting down and deciding, then in that point, the store owner, whoever it is, whoever otherwise caused them to fall, is responsible for the percentage of medical bills and things that the jury decides is their fault. So how does the jury figure out what percentage to put on it? The law says that the judge should give the jury some instructions on things. There's a good case that came out from the Tennessee Supreme Court years ago where a lady fell down dark stairs and she didn't want to turn on the hallway light because her grandchildren were sleeping.
But she didn't want to turn on the hallway light.
And that's what the Supreme Court said is exactly right. The Supreme Court came out and said there's some things that any judge or jury should look at in a case like that, including did they know? And she knew there was a light switch there. She chose not to use it. Would it have made a difference? Who would have had the last chance to do it to fix the problem? And how long did that problem... Well, how long did each person's bad conduct last? For example, if you got a split-second decision while you're stepping down the stairs as to whether or not you realize that a step is off-center, or you ever go down somebody's steps where they, for some reason or another, especially old homes or old buildings, where the steps kind of go backwards and forwards,
yes,
and they're not lined up 90 degrees just right?
Yeah.
If you try to figure that out in a split second, you got a lot less time to decide it than the person who put it there and has had it up there for 5 years in their restaurant or business without ever changing anything about it. So the Supreme Court came in and said, take all those things into account. How long did you have to avoid the injury? What purpose? One of the other things is, what were you actually trying to accomplish at the time? If that lady, little old lady, I think if I remember correctly, she was going to use the restroom, which is an important purpose for any of us. But also if she was in an emergency, trying to take care of a child,
mm-hmm.
If your purpose is really noble, then you probably shouldn't be as at fault as somebody else who just wasn't really trying to do anything and didn't care. You line all that up and you ask a jury to decide. And a jury's all of us. And the last most important part that the Supreme Court said is common sense.
Yeah.
So all those other things I said are really just, in my mind, putting words in terms to what my common sense tells me anyway, is the longer you screw up, the more responsible you are. The more you are trying to help somebody else out, the less responsible you are. And the more obvious the problem, the more responsible the victim is for not noticing it themselves.
Yeah, it makes sense. And again, we're talking about slip and fall cases today. And there are tons of things, tons of issues, I guess, that you guys have to look at as a law office whenever somebody comes in and says, hey, here's what happened. But you do have those rare cases, I would assume, where somebody slips and falls in some big company, some business. And that fall, the end result is they have horrible pain the rest of their life. They had to have a leg removed in worst case scenarios here. But in those types of situations, because I know they probably happen every once in a while, what occurs? Because I'm sure there's cases where the person who fell, it's literally not their fault whatsoever. It's a company who maybe they knew about this problem, whatever it is, for years. They just never fixed it. And then you have Better Business Bureau ratings, people actually complaining about that problem.
Yeah. So what actually occurs? Well, first, we're looking at the exact part you hit the nail on the head about, and that is, did the company or the business owner, did they do something wrong, right? And the law really puts it, again, it's common sense, but it puts words to what I feel anyway.
Yeah.
One is, if the company itself made the problem, if they drove a nail up through the floor and it was poking up a quarter inch through the floor, then they did it. That's their fault, right? So if they actually cause a problem, that's their fault. If it was there for so dang long that they should have seen it, that anybody with any reasonable care for their customers would have seen it. So if they didn't cause the nail to come up, but it was there for 6 weeks and they hadn't mopped that area or cleaned anything up whatsoever, they just ignored it. The longer it's been there, the more obvious it is, the more the business owner or the property owner should get around to seeing that issue. Same is true. We talk about slip and falls in particular. That's true with a spill as well. I mentioned somebody, one customer is walking in front of the other and they spill. Company doesn't have any opportunity to fix that.
Yeah.
But if they're at a busy restaurant and nobody's gone out into the seating area for 3 hours, so that there's been a spill sitting there for 3 hours, there's more than enough time to mop that up. I mean, I'd be mad at my kids if they left a spill in my kitchen for 3 hours, right?
Yeah.
So you look at those things, and then there's one other kind of rarer circumstance where, think about the nastiest place you've been where you serve your own drinks, where they got fountain drinks.
Uh-huh.
You know, I drive all over the Southeast in my job, and I've been to some great gas stations with good coffee, and I've been to somewhere that I'm going to keep driving on down the road. And if they're just having customers spill it all day long, nonstop, at some point they may not have to be aware that there was a spill now, because there's always a spill.
Yeah.
You know, you need to go
24/7 spills.
Yeah. So those are the ideas. We then are trying to figure out if that happened. We're trying to get a hold of evidence. Is there any video of the event? This day and age, there's video of just about everything we're doing all the time. Is there any video? Are there any witnesses? And what was the victim doing? You know, if they had been out at a restaurant and had several glasses of wine, at some point you start to question, how careful were you really being?
Mm-hmm.
So we look into all that on the front end and try to get the answers to the essential question of, is this property owner, the store, restaurant, business of any kind, are they responsible? And if so, is anybody else also responsible? So we can properly advise the victim, this is what you can expect down the road.
And you know, when you advise the victim there, you know, this is what you can expect, you don't, or I guess, are you at a point where you know, all right, well, doctors told us you're going to have to go back and have this procedure done in 5 years. Then in 10 years, expect to have this done. You know, something that's progressive and painful. How do you line all this stuff up?
It's challenging. If you know what you're doing, you kind of light a whole bunch of fires at the same time. So while you're working on who's responsible, you're also working on what are the consequences, what are the harms that were done. If you try and line them all up sequentially, that case is going to last years upon years upon years. But if you're going in and saying, while we're tracking down video, while we're reaching out to nearby places as well and getting all that, let's also make sure we have all the medical records, and any questions we have, let's either talk to the doctor or get a second opinion. Because some doctors aren't available, so they're retired, or they just don't want to get involved with the lawyers. And you mentioned like progressive injury. I can tell you, for example, if you have an amputation and you have a prosthetic limb as a result, those things don't last forever. People get their rings resized. Lord knows I've had to get my jacket resized a few times as I've gained and lost weight over the years. People change.
Right.
So about every 5 to 10 years, they have to refit, redo any prosthetic. Besides wear and tear, it's the body's not staying a statue the entire time.
Right.
So we know that from the outset. We know when we can get the stuff together. Other times you get somebody that comes in and they might be dealing with a closed head injury where there's a known or likely brain injury. And those things, they take time to heal. They take a lot of treatment to heal. And you really don't know a lot of times for a year or two, depending on the circumstances, how much healing the patient can hope to get. So there we just sort of have to, we keep the irons on the fire, we keep burning everything else, we keep moving, and wait at the same time to gather the information so we can project out for the future. It's a lifelong injury. We don't often get healthier as we age. I'd like to meet the person who did and find out what they did that I didn't. So instead, when we're looking at stuff and saying this is going to last, you kind of assume it's going to last and probably get worse at some point. And then we're trying to figure out, can we tell from the medical records, or do we need a doctor to weigh in to explain it? It gets challenging depending on the exact case.
When you look at the value of the case, trying to figure out what is this actually worth could be the fun part in some areas, I guess, especially if the victim's looking at, all right, well, this is going to help me out for the rest of my life. But when trying to figure out those numbers, and let's say you do find that this business knew about the problem, then on top of that, they deleted the evidence somehow. Does the judge in the case look at the entire scenario and say, all right, well, this company deleted the information that you needed, and then on top of that, they knew this was an ongoing issue? Do the courts somehow punish that business financially? I mean, is there something added to the amount that you're asking for?
It's an excellent question, and there's two parts that you're asking about that I hear. One is, what happens when the store owner or the business just repeatedly knows they're causing a problem and they do nothing about it, or they make it worse? Mm-hmm. You know, it's still more profitable to do it this way. So if we're cutting corners here on mopping up the hallways in a nursing home, boy, we could make even more profit if we cut back to only mopping every other day, right? So if they're up in the ante, then yes, the judge can take that into account, the jury can take that into account, and they can order what's called punitive damages. In other words, we hold people accountable for their carelessness, punish them for their reckless or their intent to hurt somebody. And at some point, when you're just knowing, if you keep having slip and falls in the hallways at the nursing home, and you keep reducing the number of cleaning efforts you're doing because it's more profitable, if you put me on that jury, I would say yes, hold them accountable, punish them, because we got to tell them and every other nursing home, don't do this. Yeah. So there, the jury and the judge can come up with a number. In addition to pay the patient back for all their medical bills and their losses, you can put another one that's kind of like a fine that says punish them. Frankly, those are few and far between, as they should be. It's the law says it's for the most egregious of wrongs. It's for the times when we look at it and say, we are not as a society going to excuse this, and we want to make an example out of you. Then you asked about the other time, and that is, regardless of what they originally did wrong, if the store, the company, the business, if they start shredding documents, erasing videos, taping over things mysteriously. I've had photographs mysteriously disappear from desk drawers before they could be provided. I've had one I've never understood, but a lot of times when we get video in an event, for some reason, you know, they got a recording that's going on for all day long on a computer. For some reason, the clip starts a quarter second before the fall, so you can't see how long it's been there or even what caused them to fall. And somebody did that deliberately.
Oh, I can't picture anybody doing that deliberately.
Well, I mean, they had to click the computer screen. Yeah. You know, they had kidding. To. Yeah. I mean,
it took a lot of work to have that evidence.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you had to actually. It would have been a lot easier just to click randomly a half hour ahead and say save this. But instead, if you've ever tried to rewind on your TV and try to find what you know, what did they just say at that last little part of the on the dialogue I couldn't hear on TV. It's hard to get back to a specific spot. Somehow they're clipping like down to the wire. So when it looks suspicious, when somebody's gotten rid of evidence that they shouldn't have, and there's a reason that you and I sitting around talking about it would say that sounds suspicious, the judge tells the jury, you're allowed to think on your suspicions. You're allowed to assume. It's up to the jury, which is all of us using our common sense. If we're sitting there, we are allowed to say, I have serious questions about whether you did this, and I'm going to assume, the judge will say, you can assume that they did it to destroy bad evidence. Mm-hmm. You can assume that if it was good for them, we'd all be watching that video right now. Law says it a little bit differently, but it's up to the jury to decide. Judge tells them you're allowed to do it, but it's up to the jury to decide, does this sound suspicious, and do I think it could possibly have actually been bad for them? Or, for example, if you got a slip and fall at the back loading docks outside of a warehouse and the only video camera they had pointed out the front door, if that's mysteriously gone, it probably wasn't going to show anything at the back loading docks anyway.
Yeah.
So the jury takes it into account, looks at it and says, is there a reason for me to suspect they might have gotten rid of this to bury evidence? And if so, two things can happen. First, we can use our common sense and say, I got real reasons to suspect you're covering up for a reason, and the cover-up's worse than the crime. And the second is the cover-up's worse than the crime. If it's bad enough destruction of evidence, the judge can allow the jury to make them pay more than they otherwise would have. There's a crazy, crazy case like that, not from a slip and fall, years ago out in Jackson, Tennessee, where a doctor was testifying, which means he's getting interviewed by the other side. They're asking him questions about the case, and they're doing it on video so that they can play it back later in court and say this is what he had to say. And apparently the doctor didn't like how it was going, and they'd had him draw out some stuff and say, well, here's where I was cutting or what have you, but he'd drawn out some paperwork. And they took a break, and when they came back, they couldn't find any of the doctor's drawings.
Wait. They had him in the courtroom just before this, right?
This is just a conference room at a lawyer's office.
Okay, they're
sitting around a conference table, right? Just a conference room sitting on the conference table. They came back in from bathroom break, and they're gone.
Huh.
Okay?
Interesting.
And they spent the entire, well, can we do it again? The doctor said, I don't think I can do that again.
And he just drew these up, right? Yeah.
So then they went back, and what they didn't realize, and the doctor didn't realize, is the video was still recording during the break. And you can see on the video the doctor slide the pictures off the table, crumple them up and stick them in his pocket, and then come back and answer questions. I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't see him go anywhere. In that case, the court said, look, that's so bad. If you're destroying evidence obviously to avoid, you can be punished. That same kind of fine money.
Right.
The judge and jury can decide, not only must you have done something wrong, you must have done something so wrong that you're willing to lie under oath, destroy evidence and things. But those are few and far between. That happened maybe 20 years ago. I wasn't in that case, and I still remember it because I can't imagine the crazy circumstance of coming back and saying, what happened to the picture, and then watching the video and find it slowly sliding off the table.
You know, I could see where there'd be a lot of cases where the other side would say, oh, our maintenance person went in there and fixed this X, Y, Z and blame it on that. You know, but that's still not an excuse if you, I guess, received notice to say, hey, make sure you preserve all evidence.
You raise a really good one. So the notice to preserve evidence, we send that out. Somebody calls us up and says, I was hurt. If we're looking at, we're sending out letters and emails and stuff to say, we need to take a look at this. Please don't do anything to it without letting us know. We'll try to get out there as soon as you'll let us, okay? But if it's an extreme level, if it's a fire, let the maintenance worker go put it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's an important safety issue and it's still ongoing and going to expose other people to harm, it's understandable. You got to fix that. If, on the other hand, you got six buses and only one of them has this problem, you can use the other. If you've always got five in service, just keep this one out of service for a little bit. So the request to hold evidence becomes very important, but it's also understandable that stuff can't be held forever, especially if that stuff's posing additional harm to new people.
I guess the goal would be for the victim in this case, and those attorneys would be at least preserve it long enough for our attorneys to get in there and take a look at it, right?
Yeah, and you know, you don't have to wait until the lawsuit's fired up or anything else. Usually you can make arrangements and say, let's go in there. And if there may be four companies involved. You mentioned the maintenance people may be a whole different company. You got janitorial services that work on contract, property managers and stuff. Everybody needs to get the chance to come in and take a look to figure out who, if anybody, was responsible for the mess up.
Hey, this stuff gets really confusing really quick, doesn't it? I mean, as far as figuring out who did this, who did that?
It can be. It just depends on the circumstance. It can be, but on something simple, usually, there was an old saying about accountability, that if two people are responsible, no one is.
Yeah.
So usually somebody's responsible for mopping up the floors, and it's not, if everybody's responsible, it's not going to get done, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody has backup responsibility, so to speak, but you can, in most cases, with important tasks in a business, they set aside and say, Scott's going to be the one on the radio this morning, because if the list is anybody come and show up, there's no telling if anybody will show up.
Yeah, that's right. So what about those cases, now that we have all of that ironed out right there, you have those cases that you hear about every once in a while in the news, and they're just astronomical sums of money that are awarded to the victim because they're going to suffer pain the rest of their life. They're going to, you know, it was the perfect storm for a court case. But you don't hear about those often. But when you do, what surprises you the most, and what ultimately ends up, I guess, paying more to the victim or the victim's family? Is it that person who's going to be suffering the rest of their life with pain because of an injury, or is it something else?
Excellent question. So you don't hear about these big numbers very often, because they don't happen very often. Most of the time, people are going into the courtroom, everybody's telling their story, and we're just using our common sense as jurors, as judges, saying, this is what seems fair to me.
Yeah.
Right? And every now and then there's one that you sit there back and go, well, from the single sentence that I've heard about the case, that sounds like a lot of money. Which usually, first, as I said, that's rare. There's a reason it made the news at all. If every case made the news, we'd have nothing but wall-to-wall lawsuit news.
Yeah.
Instead, this is maybe once every 2 or 3 years you hear a big one. And usually what it comes down to is, A, there was a reason for the folks to get mad. There's a reason for the folks to feel bad and think, I don't know how this person's going to manage the rest of their life.
And you're talking about the jury. They're looking in on the case. This is them saying, we've got reason to believe that this person is going to be in pain all their life.
That's the feeling bad for the victim thing. They're sitting there back and saying, how are we going to set a budget for this victim to cover the rest of their life? They're 20 years old and they're going to need a wheelchair for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
That's a big budget. And the debate always comes, well, can't mom, dad, husband, or wife take care of them?
Well, then you got to say, man, we feel bad for that husband, wife, mom, dad.
I mean, we all, you know, we gave vows and things, and certainly I'd do anything for my children, but I hope that my children's long-term safety is not dependent on me outliving them.
Yeah.
You know? I'd like to be able to continue to work myself and things. I'd do anything for my kids, but I'd still like to go to work. I'd still like to be able to serve the community and things. And so taking it away, like you said, we get in this silly debate that says, can't they find somebody in their family or friends to take care of them? The answer is you hurt them. You can pay for a home caregiver and somebody else to clean the toilets and stuff for them.
Yeah.
But then also there's usually got to be a little bit of anger to it, because, you know, we don't put big numbers on somebody. We say, I couldn't afford to pay that myself either. But if the business has gotten 12 emails a day saying somebody's going to get killed by this, and finally that happens, then yeah, that bothers me as a person. It bothers my common sense and my morals. And so if I'm sitting on a jury as well, I'd sit back and say, no, we're not giving them any benefit of the doubt. You know, they needed to make this right. So those kick in. And the other piece that comes in, Scott, a lot of times when you see those big verdict numbers is there was a whole lot more going on than even just who did right, who did wrong, and how badly the person was hurt. A lot of those cases, for example, will be a lawsuit between a person and their health insurance company over whether the victim should get the auto insurance or the slip and fall money, or whether their health insurance should get ahead of them under the terms of their health insurance contract, whether the health insurance should be able to take the money away from them. And the judge has to decide how much would the victim have been owed.
Yeah.
Weird case, but it happens. So then you end up with the judge deciding, well, if there's $1 million at stake here, how much was the victim going to be able to recover for all that's been done wrong to them? In that circumstance, there's nobody actually defending the case. It's just the victim putting forward their story. So the numbers get big because it's not actually a lawsuit between the victim and the store. The store's paid their money, and it's a matter of who's getting what part of it, or if a family has a fight over it and says, well, mama got hurt, mama lost, you know, we lost mama. Should the money go to the husband or the kids? There may be a fight between victims that has nothing to do with how much is going to get paid.
Yeah.
So it sounds silly and it's hard to explain, but sometimes those numbers come out in the news and people talk in a big circumstance about them. When it's not even a big to-do, it's actually just somebody saying, well, we don't have anybody here talking about it, so I'm going to sign a really big number and say, that's what I think would have been fair.
You know, it's interesting because as you're talking, I'm kind of gathering that in a lot of cases that do go to trial, there is a big factor there in the likability section as far as the jury liking, warming up to the company that's being sued. I mean, is this a company that's been bad to their employees for years? Is it a company that is slightly scandalous and people know about it? I mean, likability plays a huge role in these cases, it sounds like.
I think it does. The law says it doesn't. But the law doesn't control our hearts, right?
Yeah.
If I'm getting called in for a jury, there's a big difference between how I might feel about a local church and how I might feel about, I'm not going to pick out who the villain of the week in the news.
Yeah.
Whoever the villain of the week in the news is. So how I might feel is going to matter, and how I might feel about the victim. You talk about likability, but there's another component besides likability, and that's what's the victim actually going to do with the money. You know, do we feel really bad and say, I don't know how they're going to make ends meet? Do we sit there and say, well, this money ain't going to make any difference whatsoever with this person? They're already richer than anybody I've ever met. Or they are so struggling to manage finances that if we just gave them more, they'd be like one of those lottery winners we hear about who ended up bankrupt in a year. I think all those things factor into people's minds. The law says you are not to feel sympathy for either side. You check your sympathy at the door. But I absolutely, I know in my heart that we all have internal biases. We all have our own feelings, and those things absolutely do factor in. Do you worry, on my side, where I'm representing the victims typically, do you worry about suing the primary employer in a small town where 85% of the people in town, somebody in that family is paying for the mortgage from the company? Yeah, you worry about that. Finding a bunch of jurors who can come in there and not be worried about their boss getting mad at them.
Sure.
You know?
Hey, and then that whole sympathetic thing, I mean, it does work on both sides there as far as the courts and the jury go, because I could see somebody who's the victim, who really is a victim in this case, and they did good things their whole life, and then that's what the lawyers show. You know, hey, this person did this in their spare time. They, you know, helped out these folks. And I could see where that would play a major role. If they're rich or poor already, I could see where that alone would play a big role.
Again, sympathy is not a reason to talk about it. You're not supposed to be able to talk about character and things, but you can talk about what you're talking about isn't really just for sympathy. What are you going to do with the money?
Yeah.
Look, I'm planning on using this money. I was going to pay for my kids' college. I can't do that now. So even though if I'm going to be in a nursing home anyway, but this is how I'm going to be able to manage to pay my kids' college, right?
Yeah.
That'd be important information for me to know that the money is going to an important result.
Sure.
And the other component is, what did you lose? What did the victim lose? Well, if the victim has donated 3 nights a week at a soup kitchen and all Saturday every week at their local church for community service, that's a loss to the victim of being able to do that. We do that because it is personally rewarding to us. So I think it's important for that reason for the jury to hear and for them to take into account is what they won't be doing with their time. Otherwise, jury thinks, well, you were going to be watching Netflix anyway. Now you're just watching Netflix with money.
Yeah.
You know? So knowing what they're missing out on is important. And I do think the value, the relative value of that to society still has to factor in, whether we openly acknowledge it or not.
Yeah, you got a lot of stuff to factor when you are putting together a court case. But we're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back. Brandon Bass with us this morning from the law offices of John Day. Stay with us.
Here at Animal City, we're not just about the dogs and cats. We also have an expansive small animal department with all of the supplies your guinea pig, rabbit, hedgehog, sugar glider, or more would want. Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. When you come to see us, don't forget to stop downstairs. That's where you'll find our small animal department filled with all of your small pets' desires. Animal City's open 10 to 6 Monday through Saturday and 1 to 5 on Sunday.
This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. One of the other things that we're doing on the remodel is that we're putting in ceiling tiles that have a high absorption for sound and be able to enjoy their meals with their families. We're bringing a lot of the green back, and we're bringing back retro light fixtures. We've added a wall while updating the look and making it a lot more fresh. Now that you've heard about the changes that we're making at Demas's, you need to check it out, so come on over right now. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Friends? Yes. The financial partners whom you've built a relationship with at Old National Bank are still at the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard location, right here in the borough. And so are the warm, homemade cookies.
Cookies are ready, dear.
Like Grandma used to make. If you need online and mobile banking, Murfreesboro's Old National Bank does that too. You and Old National Bank, better together.
Old National Bank at 2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard. Old National Bank, member FDIC.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. Come visit us for all your clothing, gift, pet, garden needs. We also have a great selection of farm needs if you're needing to work out on the farm with fencing, or also great hunting section. Just anything you would need for the home and farm. Come visit us at Rutherford Farmers Co-op. 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church. And make sure you check us out on our website, RutherfordFarmersCoop.com. And like us on Facebook and Instagram.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Brandon Bass with us today, an attorney with the law offices of John Day, and we've been talking about slip and fall cases. So as we kind of wrap it up this morning, for anybody out there listening who may have been hurt in a slip and fall case and they're trying to think, you know, what should I do at this point? Should I call an attorney or should I not and just talk to the company to see if the company will help me out? Does that ever happen where the company just volunteers and says, hey, we'll pay your medical bills?
Does happen at times, but more often than not, it does not. What you usually get in response to that is a customer service type response right away. It says, oh, we feel so bad about this. Just gather your stuff up and we'll keep talking with you. And that's the right customer service level response. But when it gets turned over to insurance and such, the answer is no. Or we'll give you a little bit, but we're not going to give you all of your medical bills or all you're entitled to. I do get calls like that, and frankly, a lot of times the victims shot themselves in the foot by the time they call me. Oh. I would strongly encourage slip and falls in particular, or any injury at a business, call a lawyer right away. As soon as you realize that you're hurt bad enough to need medical treatment, that you're not going to be able to pay out of what's in your wallet right now, you know, that it's actually going to hurt to pay the medical bills, call a lawyer right away. I mentioned earlier on, you were asking questions, Scott, about surveillance video and things like that. There's a whole lot of stuff like that out there, and there's some specific procedures you got to follow for how you guarantee that you can come into court and say the fact that the surveillance video was deleted should be used against them. If you don't follow those procedures, you can't even mention that there might have been surveillance video. So with slip and falls, because it's not real ordinary, it's the factors that come up are not real ordinary, I would absolutely call a lawyer right away. A good lawyer can tell you, hey, this one's straightforward, you can take care of this on your own. This is that really rare circumstance where they're going to take care of you just right. But you get out the gate as another example. First, you want to secure that evidence, but also just about any claims representative is going to say, we got to ask you some questions. They might even say, we're going to record your statement. And a whole lot of folks do that thinking, well, if I can get this done real quick, I don't have to pay a lawyer. I don't have to mess with the law. They're being real nice to me. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. And that's from criminal cases, but it applies in civil too. And there's an important part of that. Can and will be used against you. You giving a statement cannot help you. You are not allowed to use it. It is only allowed to be used by your adversary. So that people walk down this primrose path. They walk down and think, I want to treat reasonable people reasonably. The customer service folks seem nice. And then they find out 6-9 months later that they haven't secured evidence. They don't have the proof that they need. They've been talking with folks who've taken advantage of them. And now they're sort of locked into a path where it's going to be hard and maybe even impossible to recover them the amount they should have gotten.
So if you went that route from the very beginning, you start talking to the company before realizing, hey, I think I need an attorney for this. They're going to take your words and then turn them around, twist them every way they can to make it look like you're at fault for this. It's all your fault. And you admitted to it.
You're at fault, or I see that a little bit sometimes, but they're really just trying to get you talking so they can pull out a sentence here or there. Another thing that they're trying to get is, well, you said after 3 months that you felt like you were getting better. I'm pushing 50, so I've had enough injuries over my life to know that there's a whole lot of times that after 3 months, I was really hopeful I was getting better, and it turned out I needed to do a whole bunch of physical therapy or a surgery or things like that. But they want to try and get you to come in and get you in a position to say you weren't actually hurt as bad as you think you are. That's the biggest thing they're doing. They don't really care about whether it's your fault. If you say that on the phone, they're never going to repay you. But they know that in the meantime, they've been able to destroy the video and stuff. Mm. So delay works against the victim. And anything the victim says about how they're hurt is really likely to be used against the victim later because it just doesn't match the way the law requires.
Well, we are pretty much out of time. So if you're injured, hurt in some way, call a lawyer and call the law offices of John Day, and you guys can probably help them out, right?
I'm happy to talk to anybody. Thank you, Scott.
No problem. We'll talk to you again. Let's do it again sometime soon.
Absolutely.
You're tuned to WGNS. Again, the law offices of John Day.